I hit record, not stop. Yes. Okay. The title of the message is Prideful Humility. And I'm going to read just a couple verses in James, James 1, 9 through 11, I believe. Believers in humble circumstances ought to take pride in their high position, but the rich shall take pride in their humiliation, since they will pass away like a wild flower, for the sun rises with a scorching heat and withers the plant. It blossoms, falls, and its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich will fade away even while they go about their business. I'm going to use an article at some point in time. There's a couple copies left. If anybody wants to use it, they can follow along. I'm going to paraphrase from some of it, and I'm going to read some of it. It was from my Sojourners magazine, and I got it the other day, and I was reading through it, and this article just kind of whacked me in the side of the head, or right in the front of the head, right between my lookers. And I said, I just couldn't get it out of my mind. So I am going to incorporate it into it. Prideful humility. You may ask, how can one have humility and be prideful? The two don't seem to mix. There is a tension built into this idea which James is talking about. How can the humble and believers in humble circumstances or in poor circumstances take pride in their high position, and at the same time the wealthy take a humiliation? How does that work? Because normally in a world in which we live in, the wealthy rise up to pride, and humility is not generally a part of their characteristic. And the humble and the poor do not necessarily see themselves in a high position. But in James's case, he is taking it and turning it around. So the wealthy come down and the poor rise up. That is a biblical concept. The last will be first and the first will be last. It goes on and on and on. James, in his writings, is known as the Proverbs of the New Testament. James, as you know, was a half-brother of Jesus, so he was around Jesus most of his life. There is no story, no resurrection story, and there's no narrative in James, which is unusual in some ways. I guess the other Gospels have it in, and James decided not to. But I see James, and other people see James, as a person who was well-read, and he knew the Old Testament. He knew some of the other writings. He was educated in a sense. And he took a lot of ideas and made them into a proverb. And he incorporated them in a book. James, if you read it, every sentence means something. It's called dehydrated scripture. And so we must hydrate it and make it anew. So he takes all this wealth of wisdom, which is considered, James is considered a wisdom book of the New Testament by some scholars, and condenses it down to a proverb, and then we're supposed to take that proverb and build it back up again. Doesn't mean that we're supposed to go back and relive what was there. We're supposed to make it anew. And that's, in my eyes, the way James is written, every sentence means something. He didn't waste words. It's very precise. We are not simple people. We are not just one character. We are not one characteristic in our being that moves us. We are complicated. There is a multiple of characters or characteristics in which make up our personality and drives us. And so even in James, there's a multitude of ideas that are put out there. Each one is looked upon in a different way by different people. In ourselves, there is not just one thing happening in our beingness. I would suggest to you this morning that when you got dressed to come here to church and ask the question, why did you wear what you wore? What thought process went through your head? Yes.
I started wearing my tie longer because I were a president. I wear mine longer too because like him, I have a pot to cover with my tie.
But why did you wear a tie at all? Why did you wear that particular tie?
I just told you to cover my pot.
Yeah, but you have a multitude of ties.
Well, you see the stress on the buttons right here.
Now that's a male's perspective. Now, a woman, I can probably tell you, I don't know what went into your process of all the clothes that you have to wear. Why did you wear that one?
It's cool.
It's cool. What I'm suggesting is, we are not simple beings. We are very complex in our structure. And so that structure goes out and ripples out and gets bigger and bigger and bigger in a larger perspective into the world. We don't look at the world in a sense of confusion. Yes, we do at times, and say it's all confusing, because the world may simply be a reflection of ourselves, rippled out. Or rippled in, which however you want to look at it. We are connected. How does prideful humility work together? The example that I want to look at, or what I thought of, was Columbo. How many people remember Columbo? Yes, we all remember Columbo. This kind of a klutzy guy that stumbled around and acted like he was a real humble person and kind of just stumbled across. Well, there was a certain prideful humility in the way he operated. I see that. The Pink Panther. Jacques Clouseau, the bumbling whatnot, he had a sense of humility, but yet pride in who he was. We have in ourselves, in this world around us today, it seems to be a free expression of who we are. We express ourselves freely. I see some freedom of expressions that sometimes I wonder what they're thinking. You know, little things here and things here, and I have nothing against it. Don't get me wrong, you can do what you want. But I just wonder what caused these people to torture themselves in such a fashion. I'm old. So the youth today seem to express themselves in various different ways. It's about freedom of expression of the individual. But how do we bring that all together? And this is where this article I think I'm going to insert into. I wasn't quite sure exactly how I was going to do it, but I guess we'll go this way. The title of the article, it's under the section of bridges. It's called, Can Civil Religion Save Us? And I'll paraphrase probably the first paragraph, and you can go ahead and read it. But basically, it says that most of us were raised in a certain way. Our fathers and parents were raised in a certain way, and they were raised in a certain way, and there's continuity that flows along the way. But what happens when one doesn't have that? The idea of civil religion was by a sociologist. I'll go with that word. I can't get my tongue to twist around any further than that. His name is Robert Behal. Anybody want to correct me on that? In 1967. So it's a very early idea. And this article, I would say, was written from a Muslim American. And that, and he's the founder of the Interfaith Youth Core, and he writes about social justice and what have you. The idea is that political thought and theology takes on a civil religion. There is a religion within our country. It may not be, it's not neither secularism, nor is it traditional religious. It's somewhere in between. And I find that idea very, very compelling. For the first 300 years of Christianity, Christianity was not attached to a government. It was about being free from the world and separate from the world, and there was no connection. Constantine and Augustus tied it to a government. And Augustine started the argument of how a pacifist religion can now fight in a war. And he started the argument and attaching it to a government. That's where it came. But for the first 300 years, Christianity had no association with a particular government. And from that time on, Christianity has been attached to a government. I don't see that as being really the Christ's intention. But nevertheless, this is where we're at. We are somewhere between a religious tradition and a political idea. And this is where he goes in between this part. It says, Gregorski is quick to point out that civil religion is neither religious nationalism, nor is it radical secularism. It's somewhere in between, as I said. And by nationalism and by political, each side has its symbols in which they hold up as holy. We in the church hold up the cross, and we have various different things in which we have symbols in which we cherish as being religious. The political side of it is, yes,
say our country is in what religion? Civil religion.
What religion are we?
Yeah.
Well, this is what we're going to get to.
Okay.
We're working there. I'll get there. But in our country, we have so said religious symbols too. We have the seal, we have the monuments, we have various different things in which we go and worship in a sense, and we look at it in awe. And George Washington is kind of like our Moses. And so there is a mixing together and coming together. They're not separated anymore. We say we are founded on Christian Judeo principles. But the time is now in which we are becoming multi-religious. I'll get to that in a little bit. What would happen partway down, if Lincoln or the King's or Obama's speeches would have taken out all the religious references in their speeches, what would have been left? The intertwining of that is alive and well. We can't separate it. On down for that, best we have in the civil religion creates what Justice Frankenfurter calls a cohesive sentiment. We agree to disagree in this diverse nation. It is a participatory and a dynamic process. It is not as if the narrative exists in heaven somewhere and it drops the bridges out of cooperation into the diverse community or neighborhoods and schools. Rather, the changes occur on the ground. This is a work in progress. We are a unique nation. Most nations, which I'll put this in here, but later comes in, most nations are either German, French. They have a nationality attached to them. We are the only nation that does not. There is not a nationality called American, whether or not we believe it or not. We are a mixture. We are a unique experiment, to say the least. And so what is happening and the attitudes and the events that are happening in the ground. Day by day by day. There is always this tension all the time between various different ideas and different aspects, and that's what makes us healthy. Diversity can make us healthy, or it can drive us any other way. And when we discover that our civil religion narrative is no longer connects to our past or to our present or our hopes for the future in a satisfactory way, so we listen to new voices and add some new symbols and some new de-emphasis of others and elevation of these stories and demoting of those and reinterpretation of the whole narrative. And so we continue being America, or rather we become a better America. We are in a time in which we have to learn to get along with somebody different. I think we are in a stalemate in a lot of different areas in around us. I was listening to music coming home yesterday from Kyle and Amanda's wedding, and I turned on a radio station. I got up close to home, and 99.1, it was a rock station, and they're playing the same music they played 30, 40 years ago. We have somehow, in a lot of different areas, hit the ceiling. We can't go no further. And diversity is one of them. We are plunk up against. What do we do now? We have political differences. We have a lot of differences. How are we going to bring this together in a cohesive way and call it America? There's where we are at. And I don't care how you add it up. We are in that spot. And if we are going to move into the future, along with Christianity, we have to change some things, leave some things behind, get some new pictures and some new stories out of what James would call, and what I would call, a hydration of Scripture. We must, or we're going to stalemate. We're going to stalemate in our minds, and we're going to stalemate as a country, and we're not going to be healthy. Progress, movement, growth is health. A plant that sits in the ground and doesn't grow anywhere, what's it going to do? It's going to wither and die. We have to figure this out. All of us, together. We have issues that are huge. And each side wants to win. We need to make a new coming together, an adhesiveness coming together. He goes on to write on down through in the center of the center column that a Harvard social scientist has looked at the diversity as it begins to emerge, and it begins to be more and more, people tend to pull back and to pull back into their shells and pull away because they're scared. It says they tend to hunker down. People living in ethnically diverse settings appear to hunker down, that is to pull back like a turtle. In other words, as diversity increases, the qualities that typically characterize a strong community decrease. And the higher the diversity, the more people distrust their neighbor and the less volunteering and give to charities. An interesting idea. How uncomfortable are we about people that are different than us? We are. It's natural. It's something we have to overcome. It's something we have to educate ourselves. It's something we have to immediately look at. We talked a little bit out here in Sunday school. Jean said, her daughter said, looked behind and saw a person with, who was the person in the brown behind us? That was brown.
No, she asked who the brown lady was.
Okay. And here was just a person in a brown dress. Jeannie thought it might have been a black person.
It could have been.
See, this is how we are. I don't care how hard you think you got it all washed out, you don't. You're working at it. I would say the imperfectness of us is tremendous. It's only natural when I see somebody, I see who they are. That's the first thing I see. Black, female, Hispanic, what have you. It's a natural instinct. Some people say they can look past that and don't see that at all. And I look at them and I wonder about that. I don't know if I can understand that concept. Can I just see the heart first? It's not possible, is it? In our human nature, it is possible?
No. Well, if they're in some action that you see their heart because of an action they're taking, then you can judge their heart as being good. You know,
you can make an assessment of their heart. Yeah, but even then you're making an assessment of and you're only assuming on one little aspect of one little second, one little 5 minute of their life, which could be misjudged totally.
Yeah.
But it is human nature for us to do that.
I'm surprised. All my life I thought I was a good judge of character. And now that I'm looking at things rationally and seeing as we are, I've been a poor judge of character all my life. And I thought I was a good judge of character.
Yeah.
When people move into this country, non-English speaking ones, when they come here and they don't try to change and start speaking English, that makes us distrust them. You go over to the store, hear them talk Mexican or Spanish or something, you automatically don't trust them. Right. You don't know what they're talking about.
You don't because you fear them.
They should, when they come in this country, plan on changing like us. Not have us change like them.
But the diversity in which this country has been founded on is just that, diversity. Yes, Connie.
I had to laugh a little bit. The way he described that, except for the language, was for many years how people who lived or grew up in this area felt about the ones coming from downstate up. That if they would just accept us for what we were instead of trying to change us to something else. And so they earned the name Flatlanders.
Yeah.
And it can be used nicely simply to describe where they're from. But it can also be used disdainfully of what they, how they behave.
Yeah. We're going to turn diversity around in a few minutes, but yes, you're
most
absolutely right.
Most people from the Philly area, though, they talk funny.
We still understand them. Like to Dan's point, don't we have to have some kind of common language to understand, to get along?
Why isn't that common language Iroquois or maybe Algonquin? Because when people came from Europe, starting in the early 1600s, they were the intruders. They were the newcomers, but they didn't take over the already present traditions. They brought their own and put their own.
They all ended up shooting each other too.
But that's why we're called the melting pot. We take on other traditions. Having pork and sauerkraut for New Year's.
We have many, yes, that we incorporated.
And even though we may not be whatever ethnicity or whatever that started that, a lot of people around here do those traditions because
Christianity has adopted many, many, many things.
Aren't you a
Baptist sauce
for
that
too?
Not usually.
Get back to your question, why don't we learn Spanish? Why did they have to be come to us, and why can't we go to them and say learn Spanish?
The flowers came from Europe, and you know, the English language, where Spanish, you know, is from like Spain or Mexico, or where they
we're white, and we want to perpetuate white ideas.
Why don't we learn Spanish?
Right, exactly.
Do what?
Yeah.
The If I just moved to another country, I'd plan on...
But we are a melting pot. Yes, you're right.
Learning their language.
If I was going to go to Germany and live, I would want to learn German. Right. I agree. But it's different here because we are a melting pot. Yes.
When I was in China, they laughed at me. They said, how many languages do you speak? And I said, I speak English.
Yeah.
I always get that right.
Yeah.
And they said, we speak 14, 15 different languages. Yes. Every state there has its own language, you know. So they learn all the different languages. And the government has this language, too. And they learn all these different languages so they can get along with one.
Yes. In our white arrogance, we say only English.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
Yes. I was stupid because I only knew one language.
Yes. Most people that I did, when I go to Hispanic communities and what have you, the Asians, they speak two languages. They speak their native tongue and they speak English. I say, I can't speak it. When I go to Quebec, I was threatened not to get unloaded. If I was a resident of Canada, they were not going to unload me because I didn't speak French. But I was fortunate enough, I was from the U.S., they said, that's okay, we'll unload you.
Yeah, I was going to say, most of the Western Hemisphere doesn't speak English. The United States mainly speaks English, and much of Canada, except for the French-speaking part.
Yes.
And the rest of the hemisphere speaks Spanish, except for Brazil, which speaks Portuguese. So we're really more of a minority than we think of ourselves.
In the educational system, we should incorporate language.
Yes.
And I think we need to change some of our white ideas and incorporate diversity. Yes.
Historically, I think it's important to point out there used to be foreign language presses. And Milwaukee, for example, had two or three different newspapers that printed only in German. And they had a Polish newspaper. And so if you're looking at it historically, there's far less immigrant hanging on to their foreign language than there was 100 years ago or even 50 years ago. Almost all of those foreign language newspapers have literally died because the people that used to read them have died. And their children now speak English and their grandchildren.
Right. Now, when I was growing up, my parents spoke Pennsylvania Dutch. I didn't learn that. I know a few words, but I wished I would have picked it up. Then I would have a somewhat of a, what you would call Germany, a dialect of a German of some sort, but I never did. I only know a few words, and I wished I would have. And I could have called myself bilingual, but I'm not. I would like to have learned, when I go into the Spanish communities and deliver, because I go to a lot of places, that's where people that unload me. And they speak Spanish, and I would like to learn that.
Maybe we should have classes.
Maybe we should.
There's an app for everything.
Huh?
There's an app for everything. You can learn Dutch, you can learn Spanish, you can learn German.
But I have to put
there's
the app into my brain.
No, there's an app for everything.
Yes, I know. It takes effort and time, and but I think we tend to think that everybody should be like us. And I'm diversity. Diversity can also be a strength, and I think it should be reshaped and strengthened, and it can strengthen the community and create a new narrative for us. It can make a sense of on the top of the last column on the right. It can make a wider sense of we. In this nation, we as a nation, we are the diversity, the melting pot of the world. We are an experiment of what can happen, could happen around the world. And I believe the world needs to not forget its diversity or where its heritage, but move and enhance and broaden and make a wider we, not only in the United States, but in the world around us. Interesting statistics I found on wealth. How many people here think they're rich? Well, globally, if you make more than $32,000 a year, you're in the top 1% of the world. I thought that was an interesting statistic. So, most of us or in the top 1%. But we have all these things, and we're some places. I forget one of them. I forgot to write it down. Gehenna, Guam, or someplace. It would take 200 years for a person to earn $32,000. You imagine? And we're supposed to compete globally, and they're supposed to compete with the world. We need to change. We need to change the model. Whatever our current challenges might be, it is a good bit easier to engage in this process in the United States than to say France, Germany, and Spain. Here's where, because these countries were either French, Spanish, or German, and their ethnicity was not a melting pot. It was associated with the ways in which they believed and what have you. But we can reasonably point to our founding documents. Now, here's a word that I'm going to probably stumble over. From the Flushing... It is a forcibly approachful protest. That's what the word means. I wrote it down because I wasn't quite sure that I would... I knew I didn't know what it would mean. So we can kind of forcibly protest the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution to say, this is a nation of all people. Now, I have been informed several times that the founding fathers were white, male, and that was it. When they meant all, that's what it meant. So that all part of it now needs to expand, is what he's saying, to include all. The church needs to expand to include all. There is this expansion again that I'm going to go back to that we need to look at. We need to grow out further, make a broader sense of we. But I don't think we need to lose our identity and what we believe in this whole process. We just need to work it and mesh it together. It says, Grotesky claims that the religious dimension of American and civil religion has drawn from Judeo-Christian traditions, specifically the Old and the New Testament. Only these texts? He asks the question. If religious language and symbols play, a key role in American civil religion, and if America is getting more religiously diverse, then the obvious question is, how will other sacred texts and religious vocabulary be incorporated into our evolving civil religion? We have to, again, he's asking this question. How are we going to mix it in? How are we going to change? What are we going to accept? What are we not? How much tension are we going to have? This week there was a lot of things talked about words and the use of words. We talked about it last Sunday's message. Words mean something. They carry with them great power. A person down in Virginia shot a congressman because he didn't agree with the opposite side. It's getting to that point. It's dangerous. We need to calm down and to think about our rhetoric in which we put out. We all do it. I do it. We all do it. We need to stop and think about it.
I've noticed the news has finally calmed down a little bit. They were... especially one or two stations, very vocal against Trump, against the government, against just about everything. And they couldn't see that they were simply keeping the whole hate thing going. But I see once the government, some of the officials started calling for a calming down of things, that they aren't quite as vocal about it.
We'll see how long that lasts. Yes, we need to calm our rhetoric down. I may not like Trump or like Trump, whatever it is in this audience.
I'm voting.
You what?
I voted.
I voted?
Like you, dislike you at the same time.
Oh, both. Okay, I didn't hear that. I you spoke behind, I have to lip read sometimes in order to understand. Right. So, nevertheless, he's our president.
Yeah.
We have to have some kind of respect for the whole system, or we're just going to fall apart. I'm going to use an analogy. A zipper. There's a left side of the zipper and a right side of the zipper. The teeth are called elements. And the thing that slides up and down is called the slider. We are the teeth or the elements. We can either butt heads and the zipper doesn't work, or we can mesh together and allow love to slide up and down the zipper and work together.
Awesome. The one that's got the teeth that is Trump.
I understand where you're coming from, but we
don't
can't,
know enough to.
I don't want to go too far into the Trump thing. That, yes, it's going to take an effort, but we should carry that message of protest in a loving way. That's the part in which we need to do it. The rhetoric needs to calm down, and we need to come together like a zipper in love of Christ. Any other comments? Amen.
I'd like to say the founding fathers, they were thinking of justice, just us. And they changed the word to justice so they can keep everything for the white male, you know, and not anyone that's in the color, just us. But now, in our society, we have to include everyone.
We do.
And show love. Mercy, in the Bible, it says, triumphs over justice.
Yes, it does say that.
And both kinds of justice. The just us.
James will say that.
The just us and the justice, that what we really deserve to get, we don't get because of his mercy.
Yes.
So we want to show what other people really deserve to get, and they don't get because of our mercy. So mercy trumps. Mercy trumps justice.
I'm going to stop right there.
Amen.
2 wet my brow and kept pushing through. I couldn't see how every sign pointed straight to you. But every long lost dream led me to where you are. Others who broke my heart, they were like northern stars pointing me on my way into your love. This much I know is true, that God bless the broken road that led me straight to you. Yes, he did. I think about the years I spent just passing through. I like to have the time I lost and give it back to you. You just smile and take my hand. You've been there, you understand. It's all a part of the grander plan that is coming true. That every long lost dream led me to where you are. Others who broke my heart, they were like northern stars pointing me on my way into your loving arms. This much I know is true, that God bless the broken road that led me straight to you. And now I'm just a rolling home,
into your loving arms. This much I know.